Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for KER Politics. We're lucky this week in the sense that all of our 25 stations that pick up the show are with us starting this week. Good news for everybody. We're going to talk about a number of interesting items today. One of the first level of interest for me, highest level of interest for me, is the way the progressives are handling the justice system. I watched Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, was interviewed last night, and I have to tell you, the guy does not come across well at all. What do you think about Garland, and what do you think about what the progressives are doing, Jim?
Yeah, so Merrick Garland was before the Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday.
Yeah.
He was interviewed by Senators Lee, by the entire board or the entire committee, but most importantly, Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri and Senator Lee from Utah, as well as Senator Cruz from Texas. Basically, in my view, made it some very clear points of how the Justice Department is being imbalanced in its approach to justice against not only Christians, but favoring progressive ideologues.
Right.
And I think it was a pretty damning testimony for Merrick Garland.
He was unable to respond
effectively to a lot of these without lying.
Yeah, it was incredibly damning in the sense that I remember he was asked the following question: why didn't you do anything to protect the Supreme Court judges, given the fact that their lives were all in danger? He gave some kind of technical answer. He said he did everything that was possible, and that's totally not true.
Well, yes, it's not true. He did not. He did, in his testimony, he claimed that he, instructed the U.S. Marshals to do something. But the problem is, with the exception of the potential assassin for Brett Kavanaugh, he failed to arrest anybody that was protesting outside of their homes, which is against federal law.
Right.
He failed to arrest people that were intimidating them and attempting to make threats against them, including Democratic politicians. And of course, we've seen the complete opposite when it's come to conservative values, where relatively peaceful Christian conservatives that have been either just praying or standing outside abortion clinics, he has gone after with zealousness, while allowing these others to go basically unchallenged, the leftist progressives.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting when you bring up the thing about the Christians and the Jews that were actually praying. What was very interesting to me about that is there were eight members of a family out in front of their house, all praying for justice in America, and they were all arrested. The children, there were eight kids and two adults. The adults and the kids, if I'm not mistaken, were arrested. I don't see how that could possibly do the progressives any good in the upcoming vote in 2400, Jim.
Well, what I think is happening here, the Justice Department has a progressive agenda.
Yeah.
So Merrick Garland, as well as the FBI following the directions of the Department of Justice, and then the leftist progressives that are inside the administration in the Justice Department and the assistant and associate attorneys general, they are pushing agendas in order to intimidate the conservative population and threaten them with jail and potential incarceration and prosecution to silence them against their fundamental right, against basically against their right to protest and their rights to stand up for the religious positions they believe in. And I think that's a very damaging position for the Department of Justice to take. But at the same time, it does silence people into compliance, and that's what they want.
Yeah.
They want to silence people. They want to use the media. They want to use all the powers that are behind this administration, the federal powers, in order to stop opposition and silence them. And they've got media and tech companies that support them.
Yeah. I want you to do me a favor. I want you to go back a few years. Now, you may be too young to answer this question, but let's compare Merrick Garland to John Foster Dulles.
Well, I mean, John Foster Dulles, that's quite a long time ago, so yeah. I wouldn't want to do that. But let's just look at, really, in recent times, where the Department of Justice, and there has been always, and there always will be, mistakes that are made, but ultimately, the Department of Justice was responsive to the people of the United States in order to show and to prove equality under the law.
Right.
Now, that becomes unbalanced to some extent, but never, it, certainly in my lifetime, have I ever seen this much of an imbalance where they've been absolutely attacking a political opposition in order to achieve dominance in the political realm through legal means.
Right.
And we see it with the attacks on Donald Trump, with the Mar-a-Lago raid. We see the lack of equal treatment under the law for the Biden problems with his classified documents.
Yeah.
You see it with this this Mr. Houck that was arrested after a local court and police had found no justification for any of this when he was actually protecting his son from a very vocal pro-choice activist and yelling at this young man, at this man's young son. He pushed him away. The local authorities threw that out, but then the FBI, in order to prove a point and in order to intimidate people, used law enforcement and the FBI with arms and weapons to go arrest him when they could have called him on the phone and said, hey, come in and let's see this. Now, they lost that case in court. So it's actually a fact that they overused power in an unjustifiable way. And Merrick Garland could not answer that effectively yesterday. And his cop-out was, we're using standard procedure, is an absolute lie.
Yeah.
That is a direct out-and-out lie. And if you have an attorney general that would lie before a congressional oversight committee, a Senate committee, that is a serious problem in the United States. And you haven't seen this level of incompetence with the Department of Justice in my lifetime.
I agree 1,000%, Jim. I also want to bring up the fact, let's be somewhat balanced here. I want to bring up the fact that the situation in Canada with Justin Trudeau now is even worse. You know, and it leads me to really stop and think about the conspiracy theory, one world order, etc., etc. I know a lot of people are going to say, well, you're nuts. Well, maybe I'm nuts, but the fact of the matter is Justin Trudeau is very involved in that movement with the World Economic Council. That's a pretty well-known fact. You want to wrap it up, Jim? We got about a minute and a half.
Yeah, you bet. So Justin Trudeau has used his powers, executive powers, as premier, prime minister in Canada to arrest opposition that were protesting his lockdown policies, that were failed lockdown policies in Canada over COVID. He used financial means to, or financial institutions in the government to lock out people's accounts. He's arrested pastors for preaching or for having services on religious services on Sunday.
Yeah.
He just yesterday, apparently, or this last week, arrested a minister who was beaten and kicked out of a abortion clinic, and out of a drag queen show. I'm sorry, it wasn't an abortion clinic; it was a drag queen show. He was beaten and thrown out, and then they arrested him for intimidating the pastor.
Yeah.
This absolutely 10 years ago. Would have been, the United States would have been arguing against Justin Trudeau publicly, but we don't see anything like that happening today because they are consistent with the global policy and supporting Justin Trudeau.
Exactly.
Things have got to change.
Exactly,
100%. States.
You guys, break time. We'll be right back. Stick around.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Coming on with KER Politics, we spoke in the last segment about Merrick Garland, the guy who just is not doing, he's doing a great job for the progressives, but he's not really doing a great job for our country. We're going to switch over to why some of these guys are not doing a great job right now by talking about the level of criminal violence in the United States today. Jimmy, take it away.
Yeah, so we see that, you know, the violence in Seattle, the violence in Portland, the violence in New York, the violence in Baltimore, the violence in Chicago. Of course, this election with in Chicago for mayor, Lori Lightfoot got crushed in her runoff or in her election. She was third place, getting less than 17% of the overall vote because of the violence in Chicago.
Yeah.
You're seeing the same thing happening in Atlanta, and basically progressively run cities around the nation. And a big part of that comes from the push in the 2020 summer for defunding the police after the George Floyd riots and violence.
Yeah.
And a very sophisticated effort by George Soros and other progressive leaders to fund the election of left-wing progressive prosecutors around the nation in these dense urban areas that have significant problems. That has turned to an absolute nightmare. Philadelphia, carjackings.
Yeah.
D.C., you know, it's just unbelievable the violent actions that have happened because of that time. And what's so disturbing now is when you see the White House, who actually, their Democratic Party instigated much of this rioting and much of these efforts to undermine security in these major urban areas,
right,
publicly coming out and saying it's the Republicans' fault because they inherited an increasing crime problem. Well, they inherited an increasing crime problem because of their policies in 2020 and what they were attempting to do to create violence around the nation. The violence and crime had been dropping for about 20 years until 2020, and the mobilized left began to really undermine our justice system at that point. And we're seeing the results of it with increased violent crime, where it's in carjackings and murders and drug use. And of course, the flow of illegal immigrants across the border includes fentanyl deaths, which are now at 100,000. 20 years ago, 10,000 overdoses.
Yeah.
Now over 100,000 fentanyl deaths, and that's because of lack of enforcement on the border from this administration.
Jimmy, let me ask you a question. Now, Seattle has become my city. I moved down here from Semiahmoo probably about, I guess it's only been about 3 weeks. The only thing that I have noticed here is a level of homelessness is absolutely ridiculous. It's so high. Even out in the area where I live, although the homeless people, God bless them, they're hanging out by the freeways. They're not really hanging out necessarily where I'm living now. But what have you heard about violence in downtown Seattle, Jim?
Well, I watched a video from this last fall, where a man comes out of his tent to collect his free food in the morning and is stabbed. The woman that stabs him begins to run away. The man goes into his tent, grabs an AK-47, fires one shot, collapses as the woman runs away. His buddy picks up his AK, fires a large number of rounds towards her. The cops come. They can't even go into the tent where they can see the AK-47 because they don't have a warrant. Now, how insane is that? Law enforcement without actual witnessing or some very specific information that they have, they cannot pursue suspects. And that includes a murderer that came running out of a house. They didn't see him do the murder, so they had to call off the dogs as they were chasing him. This is absolutely unbelievable. And the level of, when we're talking about the level of homelessness and crime, it's all because of these policies. They're throwing more money at it, and it's getting worse. And of course, as we know, in Seattle a couple of years ago, annual per capita expenditure on homeless, $385,000. I believe this is in 2020. And of course, what did they get out of that? More homeless.
Yeah. Well, what I think is interesting, Jim, is you're talking, you know, the police were defunded in Seattle, and that worked so great they had to increase their funding again recently.
Yeah, just over 2 years, they dropped funding by about $50 million. They've lost a large number of law enforcement officers because of the cutbacks and, of course, the restrictions. They've had a huge increase and spike in crime. People just don't feel safe walking down to Pike's Market. It's absolutely terrible. And, of course, the homelessness situation is terrible. However, they finally, with the new mayor, they have decided to increase funding, and they've added, I think, back about $20, $25 million back into the police budget this year. So it's a start, but they are still pushing these progressive agendas, and I'm not sure that there's going to be any relief anytime soon for the people of Seattle.
The new mayor, I have to say, is doing a very good job. I also heard that Sawar Sudan, who is a socialist on the city council, has decided not to run for re-election. I haven't heard any more of the details other than Mrs. Sawant Sudat decided not to run.
Well, that would be helpful for Seattle. She is an absolute lunatic on the left.
Yeah.
But let's talk about a place where things have actually gotten better. So this is interesting. Coronado, California, in the San Diego area.
Right.
Their mayor, conservative Republican, has not allowed vagrants on the street. He has said, you've got a choice. You can find yourself in jail, or you can find yourself into a shelter and some sort of support to actually help you get off the problem.
Yeah.
And you know how many homeless people they have in Coronado, California?
No, actually I don't.
None.
You gotta be kidding, Jimmy.
No,
that's
hold
great.
People
accountable. Yeah.
And that's the important thing, is actually quit spending all this money to try to, with all these nonprofits and all these liberal ideologue places that actually are throwing money into the trash. You're increasing the problem. You're not helping the problem. People have to have accountability, and it is possible to stop the decline and to help these people rather than continue to fund it.
What I find to be interesting is, you talk about the interviews last night with Merrick Garland and the rest of it. Pro-abortion, pro-life folks seem to be forgetting one thing. Abortion on the federal level is one thing, but abortion on the state level is perfectly legal. So what's the complaint? I don't get it, you guys. We got to make a break for the top of the hour news. Stick around.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Back after the next segment of the second hour of KER Politics. This segment is going to be entitled Crime and Punishment, and I hope that Fyodor Dostoevsky's family doesn't sue me for using that name. Anybody who hasn't read that book has really missed out on one of the greatest pieces of Russian literature in the world. Crime and Punishment, by the way, is taking a very, very different direction in Washington, D.C. It's almost funny. Jimmy, you spend more time in D.C. than I do. What's going on?
Well, it's very interesting what had just happened. So the D.C. City Council passed a law for the city that basically reduced the maximum sentences for felonies, gave no minimum sentences, forced a jury trial for misdemeanor charges, and that would mean like shoplifting or something like that, would force a jury trial, which would absolutely choke the justice system in D.C. It actually lowered the penalty, the minimum sentencing for using a gun in a felony from 15 years down to 4 years, and lowered the penalties for carjacking, burglary, and assault.
And now, this is the party that is trying to toughen up the action about purchasing a firearm.
This is the Democrats that say the Republicans are responsible for the crime problem in America and weapons issues. It's almost comical, but there's even a bigger political spin to this. So the D.C. Council passed it. Muriel Bowser, the mayor, who's a very progressive mayor, absolutely one of the most progressive mayors, she's like, this will not help us. So she vetoed this bill, but guess what? The council overrode her veto. Now, that means Congress actually gets, because D.C. gets oversight from Congress, and that's the way our Constitution is written. It's not its independent place. It's actually, managed ultimately by Congress. They said, wait a second, this is crazy, and they overrode it, including 31 Democrats voted for overturning this legislation the city council put forward. What is very interesting about it is some of the Democrats that signed it, they were hoping that Joe Biden would veto the congressional bill that overrode this. But he didn't. He changed his mind. He'd indicated that he would veto it, but then he changed his mind. And the reason why is because the politics look really bad right now for Democrats and crime. So, but Democrats themselves are furious because they wanted the personal backing to say, well, I was against this crime bill that lowered all these penalties. But they didn't want Biden to stand up and say the same thing. They were hoping to be covered from their people. So it's very interesting politics, and it is absolutely would have been horrendous for those rules to be changed in enforcement. We've already seen the problems with law enforcement all around the country in these Democratic progressive areas, and of course, as we mentioned earlier, the George Soros-funded prosecutors that are under intense pressure all around the country right now because of the increasing crime and murder and violent crime and carjackings and all these very, very damaging things to society.
Jimmy, let me ask you a question. I mean, this may seem like it's kind of out there, but I don't think it is. Do you think maybe the pendulum is turning the other way? Do you think maybe it has swung so far to the left that now it's swinging to the right?
Well, I think it is not all the way as far as it's going to go to the left. And the reason why is because of people like Merrick Garland, because of this administration, and they ignore the concerns of the people. They're pushing their agendas. And of course, they've got the support of the media organizations, big corporations, as well as tech companies.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't have the information that would actually have them change their mind. And this is apparent in polling that came out in California. I was just reading an extensive poll on where people in California sit. Now, they do not want the governor, Gavin Newsom, Gruesome Newsom, as some people would say. They don't want him to run for president, but at the same time, they want that homeless is the biggest issue for the Democrats. Conservatives are concerned about different rights. But when you look at the breakdown in the polling, you realize that they just don't understand how far economically and what damage is being done in these major cities because they still are supporting some of these progressive agendas. And that tells me that when you have a very, very powerful, large state still looking on those objectives, that they still aren't getting information that would actually help better their lives because of the media and, of course, what's happening with censorship through media and technology companies and the propaganda that the government's putting out, in particular on COVID and some of these other issues that have been very, frightening to people.
Yeah. We're going to talk about COVID a little later in the show, unless you want to jump into it right now. But, some information did come out this past week that we fact-checked and then posted on our website a lot of the things regarding the jabs and stabs and everything else you call it have been proven to be very, very dangerous to recipients. But, you know, Jim, the one thing I want to get back just a minute to Crime and Punishment. It is really sad that my country and your country has gotten to the point where violence is truly an issue. Now, admittedly, other countries in the world beat us in that, you know, but they also beat us in terms of the way that crime is dealt with in other countries. I just hope that we don't get like, what is it, Indonesia? No, Malaysia, if I'm not mistaken. Their penalties are, boy, you put a piece of gum that's been in your mouth that you've been chewing on the street, and you get caned. Well,
yeah, that would be Singapore, I believe.
Singapore,
yes.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm just... Yeah. It's just amazing to me. But, you know, maybe the end justifies the means, Jim. I don't know. I don't know what to say. I do know what to say, and that is we're going to be talking in the next segment as we wrap up the show about some very, very authentic concerns that people have about COVID and the various inoculations and immunizations and so forth. Jimmy, you got about a minute left. You want to wrap it up?
Well, yeah. Let's continue down this road of the problems that we're facing in America right now and this imbalance in justice.
Yeah.
When you have a combination of the most influential propagandists, the government, which has mm-hmm. the most money and the influence over our media, and our media, the mainstream media and corporate media are unwilling to push back against, you know, or question what the government's putting out, you have a very serious problem. And of course, you immediately have people on the left saying, oh, the crime problem is actually fictitious and it's being propagated.
No, it's not fictitious.
No, it becomes very serious to people. And that's what you're seeing when you have someone like in St. Louis this week, a homeless man that got in an argument with a man, and some 24-year-old man pulls out a gun in broad daylight on the street while this poor homeless man is sitting there and is shot directly in the head. It's like something out of the Vietnam era when, you know, with what was seen, you know, a picture shot around the world because of, you know, that really changed people's beliefs in U.S. support for Vietnam because of Vietnamese killing a spy, you know,
yeah.
a Vietnamese soldier. But
yeah.
Here we have our own people being shot in the street on a, like, daily basis,
oh, yeah.
over nothing. And that
yeah.
anger has been built up, and it's being created actually by progressive agendas. And those agendas are absolutely taking away people's common sense and judgment.
Well, so, people without common sense and judgment really are really hurting the country. I don't necessarily want to put it on a political party map. I just want to say there are a lot of people in the United States. You figure out what party most of them belong to, and you'll see they're really hurting us. Back here to wrap up KER Politics. We're going to go back to something that we've really dealt heavily on this week, because the topic that came up this week by an MIT graduate who runs a newsletter, a very successful newsletter, among other things, on health issues. It would appear that it's a pretty well-known fact that some of the stabs and jabs and gabs, et cetera, that are really big in the news right now regarding COVID really are detrimental to people's health, particularly people in my particular risk category, which is probably, you know, getting on in years and a bit overweight. Jim, you want to talk about that?
We can talk a little bit about Steve Kirsch. He's again an MIT graduate. He's a, you know, multimillionaire, and
yeah.
he started, you know, actually helping support and fund COVID kind of vaccine research, but then eventually got upset with what was happening, and he publishes a newsletter that puts out a lot of information. And of course, if you Google him or Wikipedia him, you're going to see, oh, he's putting out misinformation all the time. But basically, he has put out a tremendous amount of information. He tries to put it out in a way that allows you to review and analyze. In this latest newsletter piece, he put out, he was given about 114,000, I believe, or 144,000, I'm not sure exactly how many, but over 100,000 records from Medicare and people, Medicare patients, and the impact of vaccines to them. And based on his analysis of that data, and again, this is his analysis that I'm talking about, it has a significant impact on the number of deaths with people after they take the vaccine.
Yep.
And the more you take it, it's actually the more likely you are to die for a period of time, and it takes about a year for it to get to where those numbers drop. Now, there's a lot of questions about that. The biggest issue, and the issue that I would like to highlight, is the fact that this data has been around from Medicare for a long period of time, and the CDC is not publishing it nor allowing that out, as they have not with many other aspects of the vaccine damage. We do know that even according to their records, that there's over 16,000 people who have died because of the vaccine within a couple of days of the vaccine. And we don't know the specific reasons because they continue to push and the government continues to push the vaccine. But there have been some phenomenal statements made by very respected doctors in Senate hearings and congressional hearings over the last week, highlighting how many things the government has said that have turned out to be wrong. And from the beginning, this entire, and it starts with where the virus came from. And of course, you know, as I guess Dr. Markey said in front of a congressional committee, it's a no-brainer, it came from a lab. And he goes through a very extensive set of examples of why. And then a number of people have said the biggest perpetrator of propaganda and misinformation for COVID vaccine has actually been the CDC and the US government.
Yeah.
They said it would stop you from getting, initially, one shot would stop you from getting the COVID-19. And that turned out to be false. They said that it was safe and effective. That was false. They said taking a second shot would help you keep, or that would stop you from getting it. That was false. That boosters would help you. That's false. So there's a tremendous amount of information that's been put out there, but there are a serious number of problems when you look at the data and the research that was done on what the long-term effects are that we still do not know. We still do not know the long-term effects of these vaccines because there was not extensive research done. What we do know is much of the information that was put out by the government was factually incorrect.
You know, the only thing, I agree about that, but the only thing that makes me kind of unhappy about the COVID situation is you are seeing some really, really bizarre, quote-unquote, editorials on the internet. I watched one yesterday that basically, you know, alluded to the fact, and they felt alluded very, very strongly to the fact that certain families in the country, wealthier people in the country.
Rockefellers, Gates.
Rockefellers, etc. Right. Gates, you know, that they're behind this thing because they believe in depopulation. Well, you know, what kind of idiot puts out information like that? You got to have facts behind you.
Well, that's interesting that you should bring that up because there was a great video response. Okay, Joe Rogan, most popular podcaster in the world.
Yeah.
And Russell Brand, who's another very popular, he's an actor but has a podcast, and he's definitely a lefty. Both these guys are pretty much on the left, but they've been questioning what's happening out here. And they actually go through and talk about Bill Gates came out, said that these vaccines were effective. He absolutely was continually shown on mainstream media network sources as saying this is effective. It turns out he was investing in much of that, and he'd been investing it for a long period of time. And he had done these trials and sponsored these scenarios for a pandemic prior to this event.
Yeah.
He invests in them, then he de-invests, and now his statement is completely the opposite. Hey, yeah, it turned out that these things were not as effective, and there's a little bit of risk, and so forth. So you do have very wealthy people that have done, and certainly Pfizer Corporation and many, and AstraZeneca and Moderna, that have made fortunes off of vaccines that turned out to not be what they were told they were, what we were all told they would be. And so there is a lot of reason why people are concerned about that, and trying to link that together, in my view, is challenging, but it's essential to find out what's been happening and why the decisions were made to manage this problem, by locking down American economy and putting so many people in danger, and certainly changing the outcome of the 2020 election because of it, and of course, the violence.
So that stuff
has to be looked at.
Yeah, I agree with that. I really feel like it's been a great football for politicians, you know.
It turned from a health problem into a political problem.
Exactly, and that's so sad to me, because it is a major health problem. I mean, it's, regardless of what the cause of the deaths are, you got to find out what the cause of the deaths are, and you got to stop it. If it turns out, and I believe it will turn out, that a lot of the deaths are the result of many of the drugs that Pfizer and Moderna and some of the other people are putting out, and people like Bill Gates are saying, these are the end-all, be-all, these will take away the problem. Well, we don't know that yet. We don't.
What we do know, Al, and of course, remember, I wrote an article in the Epoch Times. It was published in the Epoch Times, and the name of the article was, "We're Missing the Point." And I would recommend, back in September of 2020, I would recommend everyone go back and read that article. Nothing has changed.
No.
In that article, I stated, no vaccine has ever stopped a coronavirus. That was a fact. Guess what? It mutates, and we're seeing that problem continue today.
That's right.
It mutates, it changes, and the coronavirus is, you know, it's a cold virus, or a modification of a flu cold virus type of a problem.
Right.
So it's very difficult to manage, and to think that you can somehow solve it with brand new technology, this mRNA technology, that's problematic. And what we're finding, and this is absolutely disturbing to me, certainly with children that are hoping to have children in the future, that they did no effective studies on pregnant women. And of course, the 28 people in the Pfizer study that apparently were, I believe it was the Pfizer study, I believe it was Pfizer study, that they had, the 28 that got pregnant in the research, in the study, the majority of them had miscarriages.
Yeah.
And I believe only two or maybe five had healthy children.
Right.
And I believe five of them actually had birth defects.
Yeah, so, and that's so sad, Jim. Jim, we're running out of time, bud.
Yeah, no, I see we got about 30 seconds left.
So. Yep. Yep. I want to say it's been fun putting the show together. It's been very difficult this week. We had some technical issues, but we did get them resolved. Hopefully you've enjoyed the show. Hopefully you guys are willing to talk about what you feel are some of the major issues, as our bloggers are doing. Got a very, very active blog, and let me tell you, we've got some very, very intelligent people on there. They're very opinionated, but they are very, very intelligent. Jimmy, thanks for the help. We'll be back next week. Actually, we'll be back Monday, continuing with our podcast. You guys have a great, great weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.